Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival for Wednesday, the 15th day of July, year of our Lord, 2015. Melody is bye-bye today. She's not going to be on the program. Wendy Wilson will be joining us shortly from thepowerherbs.com. First, here's the market report. Gold is down $6.50 to $1,149.30 per ounce. Silver is off 29 cents to $15.19 per ounce. Platinum is down $4 to $1,025. Palladium is down 12 bucks. Pretty good hit. $644 per ounce. Over in the equities, let's see what we've got. Dow Jones is down 23 points to 18,031. NASDAQ is off 11 points to 5,094. New York Stock Exchange is down 39 points to 10,954. The U.S. dollar index is up 0.50 to 97.14. Crude oil is down 1.61 to $51.43 per barrel. What we're seeing with these prices are, on the one hand, irrational lows, at least in some instances. There have been a couple of reports that have been up on the internet, people in positions of, I don't know, where they have knowledge. They understand what they're talking about. And they're reporting that the price of gold and silver are irrationally low at this point. They're undervalued. And that signals that this is that buy low moment. You know, this is the time when you jump in there, but it's hard to do because nobody wants to buy when everybody else is selling and the price appears to be going lower and people are concerned, oh my gosh, how low can it go? Now, I'm not saying that this is the absolute bottom, but I'm saying that we are close to that. And the reason has to do with the dollar increasing in value over the last 15 months, as measured on the U.S. dollar index. The reason has to do with deflation. We talked a little about it yesterday. We might talk about it some more later in the program. But what we're seeing, you know, $15 silver. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's people, somebody is just giving their silver away. Let's see if Wendy Wilson is here. Wendy, are you available? Hello, Wendy? Wendy is not here. Wendy Wilson is not here. Mm-hmm. So that's the producer's fault. Frank, the producer, is to blame because our guest is not here. Ringing, not getting an answer. So apparently I'm going to have to conduct the balance of the program au naturel. Right? Just me. We're talking this problem with deflation. Deflation makes the dollar worth more. And therefore you can buy, fewer dollars are required to buy a given item. And the prices of items, of commodities in particular, and of stocks and bonds, tend to fall during a period of deflation. The fall is not uniform, but that's the fundamental force. Prices are going down, and the flip side of that teeter-totter is the value of the currency is rising during a period of deflation. People will gravitate to dollars, and they'll say, yippee, I'm going to get out of stocks and get out of bonds, and I'm going to get into dollars because the purchasing power of the currency is rising. And they do all right with that. Right? But here is the problem from my perspective. Deflation is bad for borrowers. Anyone who's bought a home in the last 50 years has heard someone tell them that you can take out the mortgage and you'll be able to pay it off with cheaper dollars, meaning that we will live in an area of inflation. The inflation will reduce the value of the dollar, and although you might borrow $250,000 for your home, by the time you're done with it, you'll be paying it off in dollars that are worth only a fraction of the value of the original dollars. You'll pay off $250,000 plus interest, of course, but the purchasing power of that $250,000 at the end of 30 years is going to be much, much less, a fraction of the purchasing power of the original $250,000 that you borrowed. It's easier to pay off. Inflation favors borrowers. Borrowers borrow money. They go out and stimulate the economy because the loans are cheap. You can pay it off in cheaper dollars. Deflation works just the opposite. You are paying off your loans with more expensive dollars, more valuable dollars, and this can put you into bankruptcy. And therefore, people are less inclined to borrow and therefore less inclined to spend, and deflation tends to destimulate the economy. It tends to slow it. It tends to push the economy into recession and on into depression, and deflation is usually a hallmark of an economic depression. Deflation is bad for borrowers, and the biggest borrower in the world and the most indebted entity in the world is the government of the United States. And I've talked about this, hammered it a number of times, and I don't doubt I'll hammer it some more before the world comes to an end. But the United States government is badly served by deflation. And from my perspective, one way or another, they have to end deflation, and they have to do it fairly soon. They've got to get back into inflation, which favors the debtor, favors the borrower. Government is the biggest debtor in the world. It needs inflation. It's the reason why we've had inflation for 50 years or more, and we don't have it right now. We see signs of deflation. And as soon as that deflation ends, if it ends, if and when the deflation ends, at that point in time, the gold is going to start jumping back up. But until the government creates significant inflation, we're going to have a problem here. We're going to be down at a bottom. We're going to be at or near a low, and we're going to probably stay there until something is done to change the climate from deflation back to inflation. So, what else have we got to talk about today? Let me see. Here's something from Reuters. The headline is IMF threat to pull out of Greek bailout challenges Germany. Now, after all we've seen and heard in the Greek drama or tragicomedy or whatever it is, who would have thought that once something like a deal, or at least the basis for a deal, is reached, the IMF would step up and say, wait a second, I don't think I like that deal. I think it's a bad deal, and I don't think we want to participate. And yet that's what appears to have happened. The IMF, after all of this wrangling and, you know, psychodrama and the rest of that, the IMF's monetary fund has threatened to pull out of bailouts for Greece unless European partners grant Athens massive debt relief posed, and that poses a stark challenge to Germany, the biggest creditor. Now, they just finally got this thing, or finally it looked like a deal, and out of the blue, here comes the IMF, says, I don't think so. They don't want to participate. Its latest intervention, saying in essence that Greece will never be able to repay its debt mountain, is bound to sharpen the debate when the German parliament meets on Friday to decide whether to authorize negotiations of a third bailout for Greece since 2010. They've had two bailouts in 5 years. They're wrangling for a third one. It looked like it was going to take place. Greece has capitulated and said, okay, we'll do all the stuff you want. We'll go for austerity. We'll do whatever you creditors want. And then the IMF says, wait a second, this is not going to work. And the IMF might be right. In fact, I think they absolutely are right. Their argument is that the Greek debt is too great to ever be repaid. And therefore, this is a bad deal. Whatever is being proposed right now, whatever might be agreed to, it makes no difference because Greece can't possibly fulfill the terms of the agreement. Insofar as the coming agreement that may be agreed to by the Greek parliament late tonight, early tomorrow morning, insofar as that agreement goes through, it becomes kind of silly because the debt is too great to ever be repaid. Greece says, oh, yeah, we'll pay our debts. Yeah, but they can't. And that's what the IMF is essentially arguing. The debt can't be paid, and therefore, there must be massive debt relief. And according to this article, it says the IMF's debt sustainability analysis may force Angela Merkel, German prime minister, within months to choose between two far more unpalatable options: grant massive debt relief to Greece or see the IMF walk away. The report's conclusion that Greece needs debt relief on a scale that would need to go well beyond what has been under consideration to date makes it harder for Angela Merkel to argue that Germany will ever get much of its 57 billion euro exposure back. Germans are on the hook for 57 billion euros that they have loaned that much to Greece, and Greece isn't going to pay it. And the IMF is saying they can't pay it. And the IMF is even saying beyond that, you know, the agreement they reached, the tentative agreement, the preliminary agreement that they reached just in the last couple of days, was that there would be no debt relief. That Greece would agree to pay everything, every dime that was loaned, and the IMF is saying, no, not only is it true that there's got to be debt relief, there's got to be more debt relief than has been previously contemplated in any of the negotiations. Well, that means this thing is, this is a no-go, this is a no-starter. And the article here going from the... who is this from? Reuters. To avoid big write-downs, deep upfront haircuts. That means deep. They talk about haircuts, and as most of you know, what it means is the creditors have to agree that instead of they loaned them $1 billion, they have to agree. They're going to say, okay, we'll settle for only 500 million. All right, we'll agree to lose half of our money, but we got to get something. IMF says, no, you got to give up more than half. Huh? And to avoid big write-downs, Greece would have to be given a 30-year grace period before it starts servicing or repaying all European loans, present and future, or large fiscal transfers by the Eurozone. Meaning, They've either got to just hand Greece more money so it can pretend to pay its bills, or they have to agree to a 30-year delay. What does that tell us? Greece has had two bailouts in the last 5 years. They're looking for a third bailout right now, and they can't pay the, according to the IMF, they won't be able to pay the debt. They've got to be able to give a period of grace, 30 years, meaning Greece can't pay its debts for 30 years. If then. And they talk about giving it a grace period, but what it'll actually be is a 30-year farce period, during which time we'll pretend that, one, Greece can and will repay its debts in full, and two, German loans to Greece are still performing rather than worthless. It's all about telling and maintaining some lies to conceal a couple of fundamental facts. First one is that Greece can't and won't ever repay the majority of its existing debt. A 30-year farce period, not a grace period, a farce period is simply a recognition that, one, Greece won't ever be able to repay its existing debt for at least 30 years and probably never, and two, Greek creditors can't admit that they've lost 345 billion euros that they'd loaned to Greece. They don't want to admit that. And that's why we're going through this little drama. It's not just everybody knows Greece can't pay. But that's not the problem. The problem is that the Greek bonds, I suspect, is that the 345 billion euros in Greek bonds are being used as collateral in fractional reserve banking for other investments in Western Europe and perhaps around the world. Here in the United States, fractional reserve banking rate ratio is something like 1 to 10. For every $10 that you deposit in the bank account, the bank holds 1 in the vault, and they lend the other 9 out to your neighbors. It means if you come to the bank and I come to the bank and everybody comes to the bank at the same time and wants our money, they've only got 10% on hand of what we have deposited. In Europe, I've heard that their fractional reserve ratio can run up to 23 to 1. I don't know what it is for Greece. I don't know what it is for Greece per se. I don't know what it is for Germany, but we can speculate that the 345 billion euros in Greek bonds that are being held by Germany primarily and others and other entities, that these have been used as collateral at a ratio of 20 to 1. Now, maybe the ratio isn't that high, but if it was, we'd be talking about if they admit that the Greek bonds are worthless, and the Greek bonds are roughly the total debt right now is remaining debt of something like 345 billion euros. If they have to admit that the bonds are worthless, they may have to pull in 20 times that, which would be about seven trillion euros. Would have to be pulled out of the European economy. Now, that's not necessarily true, but it could be that much. It'll be several trillion, and I think that's part of why they can't admit that the bonds are worthless. And so we go through this bizarre little drama where Greece can't pay, won't ever pay, everybody knows they're not going to pay, and yet we continue to pretend that Greece will pay. And as long as we can maintain that pretense, we can pretend that the $345 billion worth of Greek bonds still have value. We don't have to pull 20 times that much in. It might 20 times maximum, probably wouldn't be that much, but say 10 times. We'd still be talking about over $3 trillion. That's a big hit. And where it goes from there, there's no telling, but this is probably why everyone is trying to maintain this little drama, this pretense. The existing Greek paper debt instruments are about as worthless as Confederate paper dollars. There's the truth of the matter. Why does the fiction Greece will pay its debt persist? Again, the consequences may be too great to be endured. The creditors holding Greek debt instruments Who knows? They might be able to sell them. They might find some fool who will buy, hey, I have a special 10% off on Greek bonds. Who wants to buy? And the answer will be no one. What's going to happen, what's already happened, if anyone has the courage to face the facts, is that Greece has been in default for 5 years now. And it's going to continue to be in default until we finally just admit they can't pay the bill. And when we admit that, we destroy the bonds, and the bonds become worthless. It's a lesson for everyone who holds paper debt instruments. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks, I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Frank, our producer, made an interesting observation during the commercial break. I was, in the first segment, we're talking about why the IMF has suddenly thrown a monkey wrench into the deal. You know, I mean, the deal was, it's nonsensical to begin with, and the IMF is simply admitting that fact. But at the same time, after all, why admit it now? We came to an agreement. It was a stupid agreement, but nevertheless, they had an agreement. Greece capitulated. They said, we'll do everything you say if you'll just lend us some more money. And then after months and months of negotiation, the IMF stands up and says, oh, wait a second. I don't think the Greeks can ever pay their bills. And therefore, this is a bad deal unless the creditors agree to take a big haircut and restructure their debt to where it's a fraction of what they're hoping to collect right now. And what Frank observed is that the deal that was proposed most recently with Greece over the weekend, people who looked at it said Greece has got to be crazy to take this deal. It's essentially surrenders Greek sovereignty to the creditors. It was a terrible deal for Greece. And they should, if they had any sense, if they had any dignity, if they had any guts, they should just say, we're done. We're not going to pay the bill and walk away. And instead, they're trying to get this thing through the Greek parliament. But the deal was so bad that when it was first proposed, when we heard about it, maybe last Friday, over the weekend, I'm not sure, I don't recall when the deal was first proposed, people said, this deal is so bad that they must not want Greece to actually enter into an agreement. Huh? It was so one-sided. And they told them in the original, the most recent agreement, there's no haircuts, no restructuring. You got to pay every dime. And Greece said, okay, we'll pay every dime. They essentially made Greece an offer they couldn't refuse. And no one thought Greece would take the deal. But Greece did take the deal, much to a lot of people's surprise, including certainly my own. Greece said, okay, we'll agree to be your slave. And now the IMF comes out and says, wait a second, there's a problem here. We need big haircuts. We've got to get the creditors to agree to take huge losses, much more than they've even contemplated in the past. And in doing so, what may be their motive is the IMF doesn't want a deal between Greece and its creditors. They don't want this deal to go through. And no matter what Greece agrees to, whatever the creditors agree to, it really does appear that maybe the IMF is just saying there's not going to be a deal. There's not going to be a deal. We can speculate as to why the IMF doesn't want Greece to get out of this mess, why they don't want the European creditors to continue to maintain the facade that somehow, some way, someday, Greece will repay its debt, and therefore the $345 billion in euros, in Greek bonds, those are still valid, worthwhile performing debt instruments. So, we really do have a complex drama here. This is one of those, this is better than a lot of TV movies. It's complex, hard to follow, but at the same time, there are twists and turns. I mean, there's nothing the IMF has said in the last day to throw the stick into the spokes of this potential deal. There's nothing they've said that they couldn't have said 6 months ago. What they've said has been obvious to anybody who cares to look at it. Greeks can't pay the bills. That's all. They can't pay the debt. It's not going to happen. The creditors, if they get anything at all, it'll only be a fraction of whatever's left. And even that they can't get right now. How can Greece pay? They owe allegedly 345 billion euros altogether. If they give them a 90% haircut, reduce the debt by 90%, it still leaves the Greeks with 35 billion euros to repay. No, they don't have it. They can't. They won't pay it unless somebody, okay, will you lend me 334? Will you lend me 35 billion euros so I can repay my existing debt right now? And they just go deeper into debt. The whole thing is nonsense. It's crazy. But I think Frank is right. I think the IMF's conduct in the last 24 hours has been inexplicable unless we assume they don't want this deal to go through. Here's an article from the Washington Times. Murder rates drop as concealed carry permits soar. Hey, Obama. Hey, all you gun control nuts. We got some news for you. The number of concealed carry handgun permits has skyrocketed since President Obama was first elected. while murder rates have fallen. Since 2007, the number of concealed handgun permits soared 180% from 4.6 million to over 12.8 million. Almost doubled. Increased almost, they not just doubled, they more than doubled. They went up by over, 8.2 million since Obama was elected. From 4.6, they increased by 8.2 million. They have virtually doubled. And murder rates have fallen from 5.6 killings per 100,000 people to just 4.2. That's about a 25% drop. Handgun permits are up 180%. Murders are down 25%. What do you think about that? Well, I mean, what does Obama have to say about that? What do all the handgun, the gun control nuts, what do they have to say about it? These are the people who say, oh, don't touch the gun. It's all slimy like a snake. No, it's not. You know, they like to talk about people who advocate Second Amendment rights, right to keep and bear arms and so on. They call them gun nuts. And I'm one of them, I guess. I certainly advocate it. I don't know about shooting and the rest of that sort of thing. I own a couple of guns, but I have a rifle that I've never even shot. Right? If that makes me a gun nut, I'm a gun nut. But the truth is, while they have tried to link the people who advocate gun ownership, they've tried to link them to some sort of mental instability. It begins to look like it's the gun control nuts. They're the ones that have the problem. They want people disarmed, even though the evidence is clear and it's obvious. And here's this report. More concealed carry guns are happening at the same time that we have less murders in this country. Good thing. Good news. This is consistent with the work done by Aaron Zellman of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms. Back in the 1990s, he showed that gun control laws that disarmed the people in nations like Nazi Germany and the former Soviet Union and Cambodia and another number of other nations. I think he had a dozen instances thereabouts of nations who had imposed not just gun control, but they had removed all guns. They denied the people's right to keep and bear arms. And in at least a dozen, 10, 12, 14 instances, once they disarmed the public, the next sound you heard were concentration camps and mass shootings, genocide. Once the government disarmed its people, it went about shooting its people, killing them in large, in millions. Right? And Zellman's conclusion is that, from his perspective as a Jew, he didn't want people to lose their guns because he understood that the Holocaust, whatever happened in terms of marching Jews off to concentration camps and exterminating Jews in Nazi Germany, it was preceded by gun control measures that removed guns from the hands of the public. The Jews had no way to defend themselves against the Nazis, and therefore they had no choice other than to get into the boxcars, go to the camps, and ultimately die. The same thing is showing up in this recent study that indicates, look, more people are getting concealed carry permits, and instead of having an increase in the number of fatalities in this country, we have a significant decrease, all of which is good for gun rights people like myself and probably most of the people in this audience. Here's another one. Brash and belligerent Donald Trump comes out on top of Republican polls, Washington Times. Since entering the presidential race, Donald Trump has been Godzilla in a china shop, attacking Republicans and Democrats alike, stirring the national debate. And according to a poll released Tuesday, soaring to the head of a crowded Republican field of candidates. In the nationwide survey, Trump leads at 17%, and former Governor Jeb Bush is at second at 14%, the only competitors to reach double digits. Trump's edge is one more sign that his harsh, rhetoric about immigration and toward the his rivals has struck a chord with some voters. Yeah, it sure has. He's going to be hard to unseat unless he does something completely stupid. It's going to be hard. We've got he's running, Jeb Bush is running, and we've got a dozen other people or more who are running in the Republican primary. How will that dozen distinguish themselves to stand out to where they can compete with Trump? I mean, Bush, Jeb Bush is not really, to my mind, how hard is it to compete with Jeb Bush? He's not really an inspiring speaker. He's not a motivating personality, the rest of that sort of thing. He's got nothing going for him other than the fact that it would be cute to have his dad be number 41 in the presidency and his brother 43 and he'd be number 45. It would make for a great family legacy. Might not do the American people any good, but it would be an interesting family legacy. Other than that, what's he got for us? Nothing. You know, nothing of interest. We mentioned yesterday that Rand Paul had announced that he was filing a lawsuit, and I saw the news report yesterday. I don't recall the subject of the lawsuit. I don't think it was over Obamacare, but he's suing Obama. Right? Well, it's one way to get attention and say that he's for real, too. And I credit this, at least in part, to Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump has stood up and become, he has injected some real life into the campaign. It's hard to know how this is going to work out and who's going to win, but he's injected some real life and some real competition. It's not just a beauty contest right now where people will all take turns saying the same platitudes. We're going to see a situation where this is going to be a rough and tumble fight. And if you want to win, you're going to have to actually do something or say something that is controversial and serves the public interest rather than special interests. What else have we got? Sanctuary cities. Here's a good one. Yeah, this is Washington Times. Headline is Sanctuary Cities Beyond Federal Control, according to Department of Homeland Security Chief Jed Johnson. Homeland Security Secretary Jed Johnson admitted Tuesday that the administration goofed in releasing an illegal immigrant to Sanctuary City San Francisco ahead of a shocking murder earlier this month. But he said there's little the federal government can do to pressure sanctuary communities to change their minds. Okay? As all of you know, Catherine Steinle, a 32-year-old, was killed while walking with her father by some crazy illegal alien. No particular reason. He just killed her. Right? Mr. Johnson has said, Jed Johnson, Department of Homeland Security, says, golly, there's nothing we can do. We can't stop these homelands or these sanctuary cities. That's up to the city. Okay, let's run with that. What can we do with it? All right, first thing we do is if the federal government can't control the sanctuary cities, then it follows that sanctuary cities are under their own control. If they're under their own control, then they are responsible for whatever they choose to do. Highlight the word responsible. If the sanctuary cities are protecting illegal aliens who are by definition criminals, and those criminals commit crimes against the lawful inhabitants of the sanctuary cities, then the victims of those crimes should sue the sanctuary city for damages. You know, if you're going to keep a bunch of serial killers at your home and make your place a sanctuary for serial killers, and you kill somebody, and one of them kills somebody in the neighborhood, I think you're responsible for keeping those serial killers in your home. You should be sued. We shouldn't wait for the federal government to remove the criminal aliens. The government never will. They want them in here. The feds aren't going to do anything to get the illegals out of here unless they are pressured hard by somebody like you, me, and Donald Trump. But you could sue if you were victimed. You were victimized. Turns out an illegal alien killed your daughter. An illegal alien robbed your house, stole your car. Insofar as you can identify that and you happen to be in a sanctuary city, you can sit back and say, listen, all right, we're going to sue you guys. If enough people simply sue the sanctuary cities for their responsibility, for allowing criminals, encouraging criminals to come into town And we start generating some big judgments against those sanctuary cities. The problem with illegal aliens flocking to sanctuary cities would be extinguished. I don't know how much Mr. Steinle can sue San Francisco for the death of his daughter, but let's suppose he sued for $100 million. Let's suppose somebody said, okay, the jury said, let's give him $20 million. How much longer do you suppose San Francisco would continue as a sanctuary city for illegal aliens? I don't think it would last much longer. Let's take a break for more commercials. I'm Alfred Adisk. I'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk, back for the last segment of Financial Survival. Today's segment, last segment. Here's an article from the New York Times that deals with, that touches on the recent proposed treaty that's been agreed to with Iran. It's going to take a week or two, a few days anyway, to see all the details in that treaty. Before we can begin to assess whether the treaty is very bad news, very good news, modestly bad news, modestly good news. Hard to say what it is, just said. And I don't know what it is. I'm not going to try to get into that. But what I want to get into is this. Here's an article from the New York Times, and it says, Iran deal denounced by Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, as historic mistake. Furiously denouncing the accord to limit Iran's nuclear program on Tuesday as a historic mistake, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that Israel would not be bound by the agreement and warned of negative repercussions in the region already riven with rivalries and armed conflict. Contrary to President Obama's assertion that the agreement will cut off every pathway for Iran to obtain nuclear weapons, Israel's leader rejected the deal as a dangerous compromise that will exacerbate regional tensions and pave the way over time for Iran to produce multiple atomic bombs. An entire arsenal with the means to deliver it, according to Mr. Netanyahu. Israel views a nuclear-armed Iran as a threat to its survival. For Mr. Netanyahu, the accord is a bitter culmination of a long struggle that has severely strained Israel's relation with the United States, its crucial ally. And I think that's the point here. No one really knows what's going to happen or when it's going to happen in relation to the newly proposed treaty with Iran. Will the U.S. Senate and Congress vote to ratify? Probably, but we'll see. Is the treaty a sellout of American interests? Maybe, but not necessarily to an extreme degree. Nobody knows just yet whether or not this is good news or bad news, right? I can't help wondering if the treaty is more theater than global politics. We'll know better over the course of the next days or weeks after the treaty has been subjected to more rigorous analysis, but one thing seems certain. Regardless of whether the treaty is good for the U.S. or bad, good for Iran or bad, it signals a real change in relationships between the United States and Israel. It seems unlikely that Israel will continue to rely on the United States' friendship and support. It seems unlikely that Israel will continue to trust the United States. It seems unlikely that the United States will continue to publicly treat Israel as a treasure to be protected at any cost. The U.S.-Iranian treaty may not have done much to change U.S. relations with Iran, but it's done a great deal to change U.S. relations to Israel. After the treaty was signed, or at least proposed, the proposal was signed, Israel's got to feel alienated, isolated, and increasingly vulnerable. Israel will be forced to make new agreements in search of new allies. On balance, if the U.S.-Iranian treaty leaves Israel feeling more isolated and vulnerable, I expect that the Middle East has been rendered less stable by that treaty. That's a big change. The U.S.-Iranian treaty may not do much to change our relationship to Iran, but it may do a lot to change our relationship with Israel. And Israel said they won't even be bound by the treaty. And it, on the face of it, you say, what's that got to do with Israel? Then, of course, but you get the idea. I mean, we have alienated Israel to a significant degree. We've caused our loyalty, our friendship, whatever we've had for Israel, since 1949? 66 years? That's certainly called into question. And Israel has to be thinking, what are they going to do next? And Israel is not likely to just sit still. If they have to go it alone, they will. And if they have to go it alone, what will they do? They'll be looking for other allies. They may get one in Saudi Arabia. The Israelis and Saudi Arabia have begun to work together on a fairly regular basis. They have common, despite their apparent differences, they both dislike Iran. It's not impossible that we could see something because of this treaty. We might say something evolve from Israel and Saudi Arabia that amounts to an attack on Iran. We'll watch and see, but the big change, the real consequence of this treaty may not be our relationship, may not be a change in our relationship to Iran, but it will almost certainly be a big change in our relationship to Israel. Here's something from the New York Times. It says, a new stream of oil for Iran, but not right away. That's the headline. Good point. With nearly 10% of global oil reserves and 18% of natural gas reserves, Iran is potentially an energy market mover that can compete with producers like Saudi Arabia and Russia. As optimism increased for a nuclear deal, the giants, oil giants like Royal Dutch Shell, Total of France, and of Italy looked for investment opportunities in Iran in recent weeks. The nuclear agreement with Iran opens the way for a flood of new oil eventually to pour into world markets, setting up a potential windfall for energy giants. Now, they're talking, when they say a windfall for energy giants, they're talking about Royal Dutch Shell, Total of France, and Eni of Italy. These guys, if they get in, cut a fast deal with Iran, they may be able to make some money. And so for a handful of energy giants, this deal could be extremely profitable because Iran is going to be able to start selling its oil on the international market. And there's going to be big money made. But this is not a windfall for the energy industry. The handful of corporations may make a lot of money off Iran, but most businesses and nations in the oil business will see increased oil supplies and therefore lower prices and lower profits. But as the article from the New York Times points out, it will take a year or more before Iran can increase production significantly, delaying any impact on oil prices. So the price of oil, whatever it's doing right now in relation to Iranian oil coming into the market, whatever it's doing is premature. It's going to be a year or so before Iranian oil actually starts to reach the international market, according to this article, to a significant degree. One of the people who was quoted here says, it's not just a matter of turning on the taps again. They will need some investments and technology. The oil infrastructure at Iran has been ignored for a couple of decades. While they've been sanctioned, they couldn't sell all their oil, so they didn't maintain all of their oil facilities. Now they're going to have to gear up, and it's going to take some time. So, good point. From my perspective, good article from the New York Times is saying, look, there's going to be an impact on the oil market in particular and energy markets in general. We're just adding to the supply of energy that has to cut prices ultimately, but it's not going to happen right now. Iran's not selling all that extra oil, won't go on the market this week, next week, or anytime soon. It's going to probably be a year or more before we see the full impact of the Iranian oil. What else do we have here? I've got, here's an article that was written by Michael Snyder. And it's entitled 10 Very Strange Things That Have Happened in just the Last Few Weeks. And I'm only going to deal with two of these. He had a list of 10. I'm going to talk about just two of them. Number one, the stock market exchange. Back, this has been out 2 weeks ago or thereabouts. United Airlines and Wall Street Journal were all taken down by an unexpected technical glitches. Okay? Authorities are assuring us that the hackers were not responsible for any of this. You remember this 10 days ago, thereabouts. The market shut for most of the day. Wall Street Journal was stopped. United Airlines had to ground a bunch of planes for a while. They had a problem. And we are assured hackers were not responsible. Well, it was the computer equivalent of a lone gunman. No conspiracy, just a glitch, or a couple of glitches, actually. Had a glitch at United Airlines, a glitch at the New York Stock Exchange, a glitch at the Wall Street Journal, all on the same day. What are the odds, huh? But they assure us, no, it wasn't the hackers. So there's nothing to see here, folks. Just keep moving along. Come on, move along. You don't have to pay any attention to this. But what we might still wonder, why are the markets so determined to insist that the problem was absolutely, positively not caused by hackers? Let's consider, what if there was evidence that a hacker had intruded into the market computers, New York Stock Exchange? How confident would you be that you could safely invest your wealth in any computer-based investment vehicles? If the hackers have cracked into the New York Stock Exchange, all right, that's bad for business. That's scary. We understand, or certainly believe, that there are forces, significant forces, powers that be, that do manipulate the markets and make certain elements of the market go up or down or sideways. And they're able to manipulate the computers. They do this to some degree by manipulating the computers, or at least buying long, selling short, and so on. Manipulation is possible. Okay, manipulation by the powers that be is possible. and perhaps even to some degree predictable, self-serving, contrary to your interests and mine, but still, if you know who's manipulating, if you have a sense of it, you can anticipate the manipulation, you can perhaps take advantage of it. What if the hackers break into the New York Stock Exchange? What if the hackers begin to manipulate the market? Now what? Is it going to go up, going to go down, sideways? What's happening here? It's evidence that the powers that be, if the hackers can break into these computers at the New York Stock Exchange, it's evidence that the powers that be are not really in control. And I suspect that might be, you know, I don't know for a fact that these were not just technical glitches that happened on three major computers at the same on the same day. Maybe they were just technical glitches. I don't know. That's what they tell us. Maybe it's true. But if they weren't, they become admissions, implied admissions, that people we think of as being in control are no longer in control. That does not inspire confidence. What else? And we're talking about not just the New York Stock Exchange. They wound up having to ground some planes from United Airlines. How do you feel about flying in an airplane? If people can do things to computers on the ground, probably, that cause your plane to land, unscheduled landing, does that inspire confidence? Glitches we can work with, hackers we can't. Here's the next one. Here's number three of the list of 10 that Michael Snyder provided. He said, just the other day, hackers were able to hack into a German surface-to-air missile battery. All right, now we're talking, all right? This is serious. As Michael Snyder says, this is absolutely terrifying. According to the local hackers, the local newspaper, hackers attacked a German Patriot surface-to-air missile battery stationed along the Turkish-Syria bunker, our border. The cyber attack caused the battery to carry out unexplained orders. Unexplained orders? For a missile battery? What did they do? Wiggle the fins on the missile? Unexplained orders. I mean, this is certainly dangerous, and it raises concern. You sit back, these are a couple of illustrations that living in this digital world is potentially dangerous. You know, the whole idea of a digital currency, if hackers can hack into a missile battery, I guarantee they're not using, Panda. I don't remember any virus protection program you've ever heard of or you're likely to hear of. A missile battery should be pretty well isolated, should be pretty well protected. But they've cracked into a missile battery. What makes anyone think that they can't crack into an ICBM missile silo? You know, we rely on these computers, and they are extraordinarily efficient, but they are also extraordinarily vulnerable. And it impacts the stock market, airlines, missiles, submarines, and even your banking computers. Insofar as we get caught and we are vulnerable to hackers in any of these computer systems, if you keep your money in a digital format, you got to wonder, is this the safest thing I can do in this day and age? I'm Alfred Addisk. I want to thank you for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Melody. In the meantime, have a good afternoon, a good day. May the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.